mechanical ballot. I'm going to mingle this, so I'll let him do it.
Yes, Mirabilis expansa, an almost extinct ancient Inca root crop. The problem is the super potato breeders have done such a great job that we have to search for a month to find one cultivar. So I'm going to tell you about why we should try and keep this thing alive, perhaps grow it in the Intermountain West to do so. So it grows in Andean and coastal desert. It doesn't need much water. It seems to get its water out of the mists and the just occasional rain. It is an endangered crop. The last to grow out of the Peruvian germplasm base failed. Yeah. It's Nectarginaceae, so it's got highly plastic expression. Think of the 4 o'clock. That's a common member. Drought-resistant, flood-sensitive. The roots are used for human food. The leaves are for animal forage, and they're really quite nutritious, as I'll go on to tell you in a minute. It's reported to be fairly high in protein when you fertilize it, and it has small and dense starch grains, better than cassava. We import $600 million worth of cassava starch a year because we put it in our ketchups and soups and it stops them from settling. So there's a market for some of the things that it grows. So let's start with starch. You can see that the starch, purified starch, is dusty. It's creeping up the side of the Ziploc bag. That's how fine the grains are. You put them in the bomb calorimeter, and if they're a fine grain, they won't produce much heat. So you see, the lower ones suggest that at least this batch of Mirabilis was finer grain than Thailand cassava. We are lucky to have one of my ex-students, Tik Chancharwencho, as a leading cassava breeder in Thailand. So we make the starch, send it to her, and we get the sciencey stuff back. The background of M. expansa is starting to be published, so there's three papers there from Miriam's PhD dissertation. Now, Miriam herself almost went extinct because she failed her PhD twice because she was doing a systematic project as a taxonomist in a botany department. So they just would not let her pass. But so we brought her over to Ag, made her do a few more Aggie things, and off we went. When it flowers, it can produce 4 or 5 different flower colours on a single clonal vine. Okay? Yeah. As a geneticist, that's fascinating. We haven't managed to make crosses yet, but I really strongly suspect we've got tetraploid going on there. Can we establish it as a modern crop, was the question. The concerns that we had is that when the Incas, the indigenous farmers, are growing it, and when they harvest it, they leave it out in the sun to purify. The problems are it can be a bit sour at the beginning if you don't do that. It's got lots of oxaloacetate from the rayfeeds, and we think that leaving it out in the sun is an important part of sweetening it. It has a class 1 ribosome inhibitor, which is affecting insects. It's a very effective insecticidal crop. We don't get many insects on it, but that ribosome inhibitor is safe for humans. It does attack some fungi. So it has a really long history. It was literally going back to the Incas picked this thing up. And so some of the older taxonomy and systematics publications give us these images of how it should look. The ones we've got give us a sort of salmon cream or yellow roots, the Bolivian ones. There's some white-rooted ones that come from Chicago. We obtained a single variety L from Peru, from a Peruvian germplasm base, and we collected one from Ecuador. Our flowers were white to purple. The stems, light to dark green, red or purple. The growth was decumbent, creeping on the ground. Multiple vines, very fine leaved, and I wish I had a picture of that. Morphotypes dropped from increased flooding from 56 in 2000 to 35 in the Peruvian collection. That 35, though, are not 35 different types. We think there's so much redundancy in the germplasm collection that it might only be 8. But that's the bad news. The good news is that the thing is so variable that we maybe can expand variation just by growing it out in different places. Different parts of the genome might fix. There are fewer varieties and rarer now. There are 2 ongoing field searches for this. It took us a month to find one, but Harriet Grendel and Michelle Rears are going out there to try and get more. So in the Andes, it matures at 7 to 9 months. Sometimes it will grow as a biennial. For us, it's being perennial. When we grow it in the greenhouse, it's on a mist bench. We're growing out some plots, though, in Oregon. Having lived in Oregon, you remember the joke. Everything grows in Oregon, so let's grow one of everything. So. We cure it by hanging it in a barn, and it's cured to Sweden. We did a field research in Illinois, which is really not a good place for it, but we had lysimeters, so very sandy soils, and we just allowed it to be rain-fed, and we could grow it, even down there. So there are sandy soils in Illinois where Oxbow Lakes are formed and drained. So it's not impossible to grow it in the field, in my opinion. So we did some fertilization with steam manure, peat, and fertilizer control, zero fertilizer control. We want to be organic with this. So, hypothesis, it won't grow or it will. The null was rejected, it did grow. Peat. Is peat going to be good for it? Yes. Herbivory, the effects of peat were reduced herbivory. Laminar and petiole lengths increased. Axial shoots increased. So that was all good. The estimated mass of the bush suggested peat was the best fertilizer. Laminar length also is good with peat, and the laminar and petiole is good with peat. Is steel manure better? Steel manure worked too. We got good effects on the amount of steel manure on plant height, the estimated mass, and time. The amino acid profiles and cytotoxicity testing were interesting. We found that there was a good amino acid profile. I'll show you a little bit of that in a minute. Similar to other crops and eggs and milk. And then we looked for possible medicines, the medicine man thing, by extracting with methanol and then plating them on colon cancer cells and a few other things. And that came back negative, so it's not cytotoxic. So we profile the 22 amino acids, and I'm only going to show you a few of those because those tables are getting hard to read at this stage in the conference. The quantities are in the middle range for any one of the essential amino acids compared to the other sources, because the essentials are what we're really interested in. So here's a few of the essentials that are more important in my life. My day job is a soybean geneticist. And you can see that both in the leaf and the root, there's fairly decent amounts of cysteine, methionine, and isoleucine. And it's comparable. It's not as good as quinoa, let's just be honest. But it's better than cassava, and alfalfa, and barley, and beetroot. And it's getting up there with eggs, and it beats millet. So we kind of think that's encouraging. We looked at the effect of soil amendments on amino acids, and to cut a long story short, the more fertilizer you put on, the more amino acids you get. Big surprise. And the conclusions were protein levels are about equal to soy plants even. Essential amino acids were high. Variety, the only two we've got were of very little importance. Remember, one's from Peru, one's from Ecuador. So peat was good, had the highest beneficial effect on amino acids, but steer manure was also good. So. All samples were negative in the cytotoxicity studies. We didn't manage to kill any of the cells. So for grass, generally recognized as safe. It's safe to eat. The indigenous consumption proves it's safe to eat. And we've done some cooking with it. It makes great soups and ketchups. Really, very fine. They never settle. It's delicious. So our most important results is the amino acid levels were high. The starch is wonderful. And it can compete with other crops if we can save it. The papers are coming out. We have to thank Gary Apgar and Bill Bantz, who are our nutrition scientists. We've got help from just about everybody. It's been a 20-year project for Miriam. If you imagine failing your PhD twice and then doing an ag degree. So she has been a trooper. And now we have to publish it all. We have a lot of people to thank, and I'm not going to read them all out, but you can see the number of people over 20 years that you have to say thank you for your help to.